Now, Requiem. This is something that I do want to answer for, because it is very difficult, even for me, and I wrote the damn thing. just a bit of explanation. I wrote a poem several years ago called The Misericordias, and it was 11 numbered stanzas, and it was basically just it was trying to do a lot of what the Requiem does in that it peels back the things that we use as crutches spiritually and mentally and evolutionarily speaking, there you go. That keeps us from, like it says in the poem, fulfilling our quest. Whatever we're here to do, we are given these things that we think are going to help us, and in the way they get in the way of things. It's like anything else. It's that it's whole Walden thing. Your possessions own you, just like you own your possessions. Well, it's the same thing about the baggage that we carry with us. These fears, these misgivings. We don't have them. They have us. And that's really what Misericordias, I think, was trying to do, is to peel all of that back and go, no, you don't need this. And it's a lot like one of my this film that I love, Jacob's Ladder. Danny Aiello's character says, hopefully, if you haven't seen it, then I don't know what you're doing here. But Danny Aiello's character says, basically, you fight for your life when you're dying, and you see demons. But when you realize that you can just give it up and move on, then the devils are really angels freeing you, is what he says. So it's very painful when all of these things get peeled away, and it's extremely harsh to have to dig this stuff out of you. But once it's done, then you can go on to bigger and better things, I think. So this is part of what's being dealt with here. All of the stuff that just keeps you from having to deal with the person next door, from keeps you from having to deal with, the people that you're supposed to love and talk to, your wife, your children, all of these things get in your way, and you just have to dig them out. But basically, so that was the Misericordias, and then when I finished the Misericordias, I knew that there was another poem that was coming, and the name of the poem was Requiem, and it was going to be the Misericordias' big brother. And I knew this for years, and every time I would start to sit down and try to write this, it would laugh at me and say, go away, little boy, you're not ready for me. And so I would, leave it the hell alone. And finally, I sat down and wrote out the Requiem, in one sitting, although it wasn't in order. There were, I don't even remember how many pages worth of material that I finally pared down and edited into what you're carrying around right now, the four movements of the Requiem. But I tried to put them into some semblance of order, but they all hit me in two writing sessions, and then I edited them together, as you see before you now. But it was really odd that it just showed up like it did and said, here I am, boom, and I was just have left there dealing with it. But it is to some degree based on the Mass for the Dead, and we'll get into why it's a Mass for the Living here in just a second. But I would like to point out that the translated from the original English text is from another one of my favorite works, a novel called The Dead Father by Donald Barthelme, and it had a manual in the middle of it that was called that a manual for sons that was translated from the original English text. So it's we've take that for what it's worth. And of course, these runes I have short against my fragments is a takeoff on Eliot, and there's a great deal of Eliot in here. Like I said before, I was kind of channeling him to talk to him because I think that it's like these people. You when you okay rock music, you can't get around the Beatles. Okay, the Beatles are in there somewhere. They're so pervasive that you can't get around them. I read an interview with Michael Stipe one time where he said that he didn't like Sgt. Pepper, never listened to it, didn't really think he was influenced by the Beatles at all. I was like, you are full of crap. I'm sorry, You know, even if you're negatively influenced by the Beatles, they're in there somewhere. Well, The Wasteland, I feel the same. I'm comparing The Wasteland to the Beatles. Can you tell that I've been talking for too long? Anyway, but The Wasteland is one of those big things. You can't crawl around it. You can't get over it. You have to deal with it. And I think it appears in quite a bit of stuff. I mean, you just can't get away from it. So I don't want to go into this and just flat out give you, Elliot's, type of footnotes that were given for The Wasteland or anything else like that. But I do want to talk about what this is, because it really is a big piece, and it really seems like a really negative, harsh thing. I'd like to point out, first of all, for those of you who are confused, and this goes for most of the book, is that most of these voices aren't mine. In Requiem and in whatever else that's in this book, they came out of me, but they're not necessarily me. So don't think that I'm actually standing on a beach somewhere screaming at some tennis ball. All right, so I will say that some of these events actually happened. I did find a tennis ball washed up on a beach, and just for some reason it stuck with me until I wrote this. What was the other bit that was in here? Oh, while I was writing this, a boy from part two of At Lux Perpetua actually came up and asked me what I was doing, and we struck up a little conversation. It wasn't quite as harsh as this one, but it happened. And so all of this stuff kind of fell into the gumbo again that became this poem. And there, I've had people tell me, I actually had, I've been trying to, clean up my language here as I do this, because, I want this to be a PG-13 disc, but I got finished reading this one time, and someone gave me, I took it as a compliment, because I thought it meant that they just didn't get it, which, is fine by me. They said that a friend of theirs told them that they thought I was pretty talented, but right now is just pissing all over myself. Which I took very positively. But if you just look at this on the surface, yes, it looks like, religion, and we don't get the joke, and silence and stuff like that, and I'm as Henry Rollins would say, I'm lighting candles and dressed in black and scribbling manic poetry. Which I do, but that's not really the point. But, I don't want to beat a dead equestrian mammal, actually. I do want to say that I consider the Requiem, when I read this, what I get out of it is that it is just basically a stripping down of the ideas that we bring, that we are given, that we have hardwired into us, or we are programmed with. And once we get past it, once we go beyond faith and we go beyond religion, and friends, and ideologies, and all of this stuff, then we can rebuild our own reality tunnel, as Robert Anton Wilson would put it, and be a lot better off, I think. But I did want to say very quickly about the key to this, I think, is that in the end of Luciat Eis, the last movement, where it says, what has here been joined in the name of God, let no man tear asunder. That's misleading, because nothing's been joined. Absolutely nothing has been joined. There has been no real communication going on. It's just people screaming at one another, the voice screaming at a tennis ball. And at the very end, a man and a woman sitting on a beach, and they can't even hold hands. They can't even muster enough of a connection to hold hands. And so that is it to me, that you are left at the end of Requiem with everything has been stripped away, and you're left sitting there in silence. Which leads us to